But first, Kinder Morgan is the third largest energy company in North America, and it wants to triple its pipeline capacity in the West by expanding the Trans Mountain Pipeline, connecting Alberta oil sands with ports in Burnaby and Washington State. On its website, Kinder Morgan describes itself as being committed to being a good corporate citizen and performing better than its industry peers relative to environmental health and safety measures. But a report released today by the Sightline Institute titled The Facts About Kinder Morgan presents a different view of the company. Joining us from Seattle is the policy director of the Sightline Institute, Eric Duplessis. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on today.
Eric, what should people take away from this report that you folks released today?
Well, what we've noticed is that almost no matter where you go, where people are concerned about Kinder Morgan's projects, everywhere from Louisiana and Texas to Charleston, South Carolina, to, of course, British Columbia, people think that they're running into big problems with a corporation who doesn't play by the rules. What we've tried to do in this report is to make it clear that this is a pattern of behavior. It's not an isolated incident. And I think it's fair to say that probably most of the folks engaged in sort of individual isolated opposition movements to Kinder Morgan projects don't realize just how extensive are the problems that Kinder Morgan has had across North America. And so we've tried to bring that evidence to light in a careful examination of the facts.
Let's go through some of those, because I thought it was interesting reading outlining some of the issues that Kinder Morgan has had to deal with in the United States regarding its transportation of coal and some of the coal dust problems. Can you go through some of those?
That's right. It's a great one to mention. Kinder Morgan formerly had a proposal to export 30 million tons of coal off a site on the Oregon side of the Columbia River. At that time, we went and started looking at Kinder Morgan's actual track record of handling coal in other places around North America. And what you find is that in almost every location, there's some significant problem. So if you go down to southern Louisiana, where they've got a fairly large export terminal on the Mississippi River, you can find satellite imagery of coal dust just streaming off into the water. Their system completely failed, and that's under ordinary circumstances. When a hurricane hit, Hurricane Isaac hit down there, their system just completely failed, and you know, you ended up with coal sludge under people's homes. You can find pictures of their coal and pet coke operations in Houston, and even their promotional literature shows coal dust blowing off. Same in Charleston, South Carolina. You can find locals have videotaped them actually hosing, just washing coal straight into the bay. Newport News, Virginia, similar stories there. And so you can kind of go on and on, and this is what we do in the report, with simply documenting the facts case by case around these local communities of how their operations are polluting.
You even have a picture of the air in Myrtle Grove, Louisiana. It looks like the Dust Bowl of the 30s, doesn't it?
Yes, that photograph is daunting. It was taken on Easter, I believe. And so you have two problems there. One is when it gets very wet, as it does in southern Louisiana, the coal often bleeds into the Mississippi River. When it gets very dry and windy, which also happens there, then you have coal dust, in some cases, spreading miles away from the port terminal.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kinder Morgan describes itself as being an ethical company, but what sort of legal issues did the company face in Portland with respect to lawbreaking and bribery?
Yeah, the example from Portland is fascinating. They have a terminal operation in Portland, Oregon, and a few years back, they found themselves with 159 tons of contaminated potassium chloride, which is a component of fertilizer making. So rather than pay to dispose of that legally, which you know does cost a little bit, they decided that the better route would be to bribe a ship captain, have him take the material out to the sea, and then dump it in the Pacific Ocean. That was only reported after some dock workers, basically brought it to light. It took them 5 years before Kinder Morgan finally confessed and pled guilty to violating U.S. federal law. But it's a pretty grotesque example of straight up bribery and dumping contaminated material into the Pacific.
Are there other incidents of Kinder Morgan bribing officials?
I did not identify any other instances of cut and dry bribery, but there are clear instances of fraud and lawbreaking.
Okay. Can you give our listeners some examples of those?
Sure. If we keep going with coal for the moment, in the Midwest part of the United States, there was actually an FBI investigation into what Kinder Morgan was doing with its coal stockpiles. In one case, in Illinois, they had this very clever arrangement where they would take incoming coal, weigh it with one set of scales, and then weigh the outgoing coal on a different set of scales. And those scales, you might be surprised to learn, did not match up. And so it allowed Kinder Morgan to skim 2 to 3% of the coal away that was delivered to them off of the customers that they were handling it for. They then took that 2 to 3% of the coal and resold it as their old, as their own coal. And then at the same time, that same FBI investigation found that in the Kentucky coal terminal on a river, they were simply just taking the coal out of their customer stockpiles and then repurposing it. They eventually settled with the federal government and had to pay a substantial fine for those losses. And they were doing that when their customers were public power authorities in the American Mid-South.
Now, Eric, are the ethics of Kinder Morgan any worse than any other company?
You know, I always find it difficult to make an apples-to-apples comparison. You know, it's my contention that Kinder Morgan has engaged in a clear pattern of very problematic behavior, in some cases outright illegal behavior. You know, as to how that compares to other corporations, it's, you know, outside the scope of this analysis.
Okay. Now, British Columbia residents may have forgotten, but a Kinder Morgan pipeline ruptured in Burnaby in 2007, spewing thousands of gallons of crude oil. And in January of 2012, there was a rupture in a Kinder Morgan storage facility in Abbotsford. Remind our listeners about those incidents.
Yes, well, you know, the incident in Burnaby was pretty alarming, where they the pipeline there actually ruptured and began spewing crude oil many meters into the air.
Yeah.
And it was happening right in the middle of a residential neighborhood, effectively. So you had a situation that was potentially very, very dangerous. And there are reasons to believe that Kinder Morgan has not just inherited these problems from former pipeline operators, but may actually be systematically underinvesting in its pipeline maintenance and operations. That's an allegation that's been made with great seriousness by financial analysts and financial press in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say under investigating or under investing in its pipeline maintenance. Is that correct?
So last year, in February of last year, there's a big hedge fund in the U.S. Called HedgEye, and it published this very critical report. Most of the report was focused on some kind of accounting issues that they were alleging Kinder Morgan has or had. But among their findings was, this is a direct quote from the report, Kinder Morgan's high-level business strategy is to starve its pipelines and related infrastructure of routine maintenance spending. And then earlier this year, Barron's, which is a big financial magazine, produced another sort of scathing critique of the company. They quoted an analyst at the investment banking firm Jefferies, and he said, quote, "We struggle to understand how Kinder Morgan can safely operate the largest portfolio of transmission and storage assets in the industry for just a fraction of its peers' expenditures." Mm-hmm. And then he went on to point out that Kinder Morgan spends about half as much on pipeline maintenance as peer companies like Spectra.
Eric, you've been focused on Kinder Morgan for a number of years now. What led you to this?
Well, what led me to it was some growing alarm about their expansion plans in British Columbia and Oregon and Washington. When it became clear that they were looking at massive pipeline expansions in BC, as well as a huge new coal export terminal in Oregon, I thought it would be wise to begin to gather the evidence and bring to light for folks the track record that they actually have elsewhere, because people just don't realize how many operations they have and how plagued with problems they've been.
Yeah. Eric, we have to take a commercial break. Hang on. We're talking to Eric Duplessis, Policy Director with Sightline Institute in Seattle. We're talking about the environmental record of Kinder Morgan. We'll take a break and come back. Welcome back. Eric Duplessis is our guest. He's a policy director at Sightline Institute in Seattle, and we're talking about the environmental record of Kinder Morgan. Eric, as you may well be aware, there have been protests on Burnaby Mountain against Kinder Morgan's pipeline expansion plans. Has that made the news in Washington State?
It has made the news in Washington State, but not nearly as extensively as it has in British Columbia, and not nearly as extensively as I think it does. I think the story deserves. I mean, it's what we've seen in Burnaby has really been quite eye-opening. I think no matter what your perspective is on the issue, And it's something that I think deserves considerably more play in American press.
Yeah. What do you think of the pipeline expansion plans of Kinder Morgan to take Alberta crude oil from Alberta to ports in Burnaby and Washington State?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of the idea. I don't think it's over the long term. I think it's a bad play for the regional economy. I think it puts a number of critical sort of environmental features at risk. And there's sort of a long, and I understand there's a very ferocious debate over the merits of that proposal, as well as of course the Northern Gateway proposal. And I don't intend to sort of get into the merits of that argument now, but rather to simply showcase the evidence for how Kinder Morgan has actually behaved in real-life circumstances across the U.S., which I think bears on the debate in an interesting way.
Yeah, as you said, it's a pattern of behavior that is going on for years. So the question is, why would they change now?
Correct? Well, I think that's a very fair question. I mean, I don't see how you can read through the sort of fact-based evidence that we have in the report that we're releasing today and not worry about their commitment to safety and protecting local communities.
Yeah, and it's extensively researched. I think you've done a great job on it. One of the things that oil companies talk about is having world-class cleanup facilities for any spill that may occur. But the thing is, with Alberta crude, particularly with respect to the Northern Gateway pipeline, there are no world-class cleanup, right?
That's right.
Nobody's cleaned it up before. So how can you have world-class cleanup?
Right, and I think that the Kalamazoo River in Michigan is a pretty good example of what a heavy Canadian oil spill looks like when it happens in a waterway, and the result is a cleanup project that still really has no fixed price tag that will extend for years more, and that's done a tremendous amount of damage to both the local community and to that river. And we've seen that in a few other cases where we've had spills. It's very worrisome, I think.
Yeah, is that cleanup still going on?
It is, yes. I mean, and in fact, they'll probably never be able to restore the river to its original conditions. I don't think that's a terrifically controversial claim, actually.
Yeah, and I think the cleanup costs of that are over $1 billion now.
Right, yeah. Right. I think that's...
Tell me about some of the other major pipeline incidents that Kinder Morgan has faced, particularly in California. I know you outline a couple in your report.
Yeah, California's been interesting. They've had three separate problems with Kinder Morgan pipelines. The most high-profile one is one that happened in Walnut Creek in 2004. And an excavator that was working near the site ended up rupturing the pipeline. It exploded catastrophically. Some of it is, you can see pictures of it that are just shocking. Killed five workers on site. And Kinder Morgan was convicted of six felony counts related to that mishap. And that's very troubling. Then we saw Kinder Morgan pipeline carrying diesel that ruptured in a wetland on San Francisco Bay. Many of the local environmental advocates there claimed that Kinder Morgan did not inform the authorities for up to a day after they knew about the pipeline rupture. And then another Kinder Morgan pipeline ruptured in the Mojave Desert in eastern California, and that contaminated the tens of thousands of tons of soil in endangered species habitat in the desert there. And you can kind of go on and on with pipeline problems that they've had, and I think those actual specific accidents in tandem with the allegations from the financial analysts does raise serious concerns.
Yeah, it's not only the pipeline problems, is it, Eric? It's the labor violations and unsafe working conditions as well. Go through that.
Yes, that's right. So, the U.S. Department of Labor, which is our federal agency that oversees kind of workplace safety and workplace pay issues, went after Kinder Morgan. They settled this, for example, or I guess they originally initiated this suit in February of 2011, and they claimed that Kinder Morgan had underpaid 4,600 workers over the period of about 2 years. The Kinder Morgan eventually had to settle that suit and pay out $830,000 in back pay that was owed to those workers. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you've got workplace safety issues that have arisen at any number of sites, particularly on the East Coast and Gulf Coast of the United States.
Yeah. Now, I want to go through something with respect to Kinder Morgan. Can you tell us about Kinder Morgan buying influence in the United States?
Yeah, so that's a great question. One of the most interesting things about Kinder Morgan is they will claim over and over again that they do not make political contributions. And so we took a look at what public records actually say about that, and it turns out that we can document at least 1.8 million in lobbying expenditures to Congress over the last decade or so. We can document another 1.4 million from Kinder Morgan executives and other officials to candidates and what we call political action committees here, which is sort of a way of getting around campaign reporting requirements. Again, that's over about a decade and a half. We know that CEO Kinder Morgan, who founded the company, who shares the name, part of the name for the company, he owns 24% of it. He and his wife, Nancy Kinder, mm-hmm. have donated millions of dollars, and we sort of enumerate some of those expenditures to almost entirely to Republican candidates, many of them from Texas. He spent more than $1 million on George W. Bush's presidential races. And so the notion that Kinder Morgan as a company doesn't make political contributions is at least highly misleading, despite the fact that they say that all the time.
Yeah. Eric, it was an excellent report, and how can people get a copy of this?
Well, thank you. It's on sightline.org. So if you go to www.sightline.org, you'll find it there on the right-hand side of the page.
Great. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. That's Eric Duplessis. He's a policy director with the Sightline Institute in Seattle. And the name of the report is The Facts About Kinder Morgan. And it's very well documented. It has 97 references in it. And it was put together by Eric and some staff at Sightline. And it, as he mentioned, it describes a pattern of behavior of Kinder Morgan over a number of years, and it's interesting reading. Some of it, as Eric mentioned, includes Kinder Morgan being fined numerous times by the U.S. government for stealing coal from customers' stockpiles, lying to air pollution regulators, illegally mixing hazardous waste into gasoline, and many other crimes. And Kinder Morgan was convicted on 6 felony counts after one of its pipelines in California exploded, killing 5 workers, as he talked about. In Houston, Kinder Morgan's terminal operators leave coal and pet coke, a highly toxic byproduct of oil refining, piled several stories high on its properties, and the company's pet coke operations are so dirty that even the firm's promotional literature shows plumes of black dust blowing off its equipment. In Southern California, coal dust from Kinder Morgan's terminal contaminates the bay's oysters, pilings, and boats. And locals have videotaped the company washing coal directly into sensitive waterways. And in Virginia, Kinder Morgan's coal export terminal is an open sore on the neighborhood, coating nearby homes in dust so frequently that the mayor has spoken out about the problem. As the company spokesperson said when the firm was pushing a failed coal export plant in Oregon, what we're proposing is not something we don't already do. And there you go. That's from Eric Duplessis of Sightline.org. When we come back after the 1:30 news, we're going to hear from Ed Griffin on the politics of health and health freedom.